We're now ready to begin the 11th chapter of Genesis. This chapter tells an event almost as important as the Great Flood. Here we learn about the Tower of Babel and the confusion of tongues. The flood was worldwide in its effects, and so is the confusion of tongues worldwide in its effect, at least as far as man is concerned. Although Satan was not as obvious now as when he first appeared to Eve, there is no doubt that he was still working very hard to thwart the will of God. As Satan worked on the weakness of Ham's character, he soon gained the following of the Hamites in general, and of Nimrod in particular. We cannot afford to underestimate the importance of Nimrod in this whole picture. Nimrod was a major character in the plan of Satan to cause man to turn against God. The moral and spiritual decay of Nimrod and his followers is plainly described in Romans 1:18-32. And we consider this to be so important that we'd like to read those verses, Romans 1:18-32, to give a description that the Bible gives of man as he turned away from God. Begin with verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were they thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like unto corruptible man, and to birds, and four-footed beasts, and the creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature, and likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that compensance of their error which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. The followers of Nimrod were willfully leaving the knowledge and worship of the true God and Creator, and they began instead to worship the creation. This soon led to such beliefs as thinking that parts of the universe were God, and believing in more than one God, pantheism and polytheism. How much of this new system came directly from Satan himself we do not know, but there is an abundant evidence that all forms of paganism have come originally from the ancient Babylonian religion. This is the origin of idolatry and the counterfeit religion, which mimics true Christianity, but actually is a mixture of idolatry with Christianity, which is an abomination with God. The basic identity of the many gods and goddesses of Rome, Greece, India, Egypt, and other nations is well established to have come from the original gods of the Babylonians. Nimrod himself was later deified as the chief god of Babylon, Merodach or Merdak. These pagan gods were also identified with the stars and planets, the hosts of heaven, with the worshiping of the sun being one of the main activities. This system was orderly followed in the zodiac with its numerous constellations, a remarkable construction which seems to have been the common possession of all the nations of antiquity. They had many images of men and birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things located on the star charts of the heavens and in their stone and metallic images in the temples and places of their worship. But actually, behind this facade of images lurked a real host of the heavens, Acts 7:42, the angelic and demonic host of Lucifer himself. We learn in 2 Peter 2, verse 4, that many of these rebel angels have been cast down to hell, or Tartarus, and delivered into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment. But yet there remained a great number of these rebel angels to actively oppose the work of God and the people of God. In Ephesians 6, verse 12, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." The main weapon of Satan and his co-workers has always been deception. He is the one which deceiveth the whole world, Revelation 12:9. The purpose of this deception is to get humans to disobey God and to worship something or someone other than the true God of creation. Revelation 13:14, "And deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of his miracles which he had the power to do." Satan works more by corrupting the true plan of God rather than by creating a unique plan of his own. He mimics or counterfeits God's true plan into a near identical one, which is actually corrupt and ungodly. So it is quite possible that the system of paganism, with its astrological emblems and complex mythologies and mysteries, are actually an early distortion of God's true revelation about his creation and promised redemption of the universe. Consequently, the zodiac system of constellations may originally have been devised by the patriarchs as a method to remember the divine promises by marking them on the very heavens themselves. If so, the system we know as astrology is a corruption of the original significance of the heavenly bodies, which were originally created to serve for signs and seasons. But regardless of the original intent of the zodiac system of constellations, Nimrod and his followers interpreted him in such a way as to lead to astrology and to the other evils of paganism and idolatry. Also, we see that the development of this system of idolatry and Satan worship was associated with an attempt to unify all mankind under one government. That one government was not to be a government in which God was the supreme ruler, as implied by God to Noah when he committed to man the responsibility of human government, but rather this universal government was to be a dictatorship under Nimrod the rebel. According to our best information, Nimrod not only set up a military dictatorship, but also established a government ruled by priests, in which he was the chief priest, and evidently the chief object of worship. And of course, there are governments in our modern times which follow the same pattern, and it seems that Queen Semiramis, thought to be Nimrod's wife, was also an active leader in the conspiracy. But not only has the original Babylon religious system served as the source of all the world's non-Christian religions. Babylon, according to Revelation 17:5, was the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. But this corrupt system has also infiltrated and corrupted the religions claiming to be Christian to a very large extent. This has taken place in terms of ritualistic acts, but also with actual idolatry being practiced by many who claim to be Christians. And of course, most of these people are doing this ignorantly, not realizing that their acts are actually idolatry, a part of the deception of Satan. And furthermore, this influence of Satan is found in the philosophy of evolution, which has filled the educational and political institutions with this doctrine which denies God of his glory. In Genesis 9:1, God commanded the sons of Noah to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. To do this in an orderly manner, God had ordained the principle of human government, Genesis 9:6. Evidently, God had intended for this to be done in organized, scattered groups. But as it turned out, men in general refused to submit willingly to this arrangement. As men began to multiply, they preferred to live together in one unit instead of separating into many units. And so, as we shall see in chapter 11, God had to change this situation by special intervention. So now as we move into this 11th chapter of Genesis, we'd like to read verses 1 and 2 of this 11th chapter. "And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. As the people left the less comfortable areas of Ararat, they moved eastward or southward to Shinar and the fertile Mesopotamia plain, where they decided to settle and build a city. This region may have reminded them of their home before the flood, for they named the rivers Tigris and Euphrates after two of the rivers that had once flowed from the Garden of Eden. The immediate descendants of Noah, of course, all spoke the same language, which was the same language as before the flood. It is probable that this language was very near to or even the same language as Hebrew, since the proper names of men and places in the period before Babel all have meanings only in Hebrew and its associated languages. It is likely that Shem did not participate in the Babel rebellion, so it is probable that his own language was not changed by the confusion of tongues. More than likely, his family continued speaking the same language they had always spoken before this confusion at Babel occurred. The ability for humans to speak and have language is truly one of the most amazing qualities of mankind. The evolutionist is utterly unable to explain the unremovable gulf between the chatterings of animals and human language. The unique and fundamental essence of speech is a part of the very nature of man. It's shown by the fact that God is revealed to him through his word. Jesus Christ is the living word. God has spoken to us by his son, Hebrews 1 and 2. We can easily see that this was the very reason that man was created able to speak and hear, that is, that he might be able to communicate between God and himself. And secondarily, that there might be communication between man and man. But when man began to abuse and misuse this divine gift in order to cooperate as they rebelled against God, then God brought about a judgment on them which confused their tongues and thereby forced them to separate from each other. The whole population is said to have been of one language and one speech, or literally of one lip and one set of words. It was truly one language. This is the same language, evidently, as that spoken before the flood. It is also very probable that this vocabulary included a written language, although the various tribes had to develop new systems of writing later after the confusion of tongues. As people migrated away from the Ararat region, they moved from the east, according to the Revised Standard Version. Since Shinar is southeast of Ararat, this may suggest that they had first traveled to the far southeast into the region of modern Persia or Afghanistan, and then later headed west into Mesopotamia. However, this phrase, from the east, is of certain meaning. Many of the Bible scholars think it should be translated as eastward. The NIV translation says from the east. But in any case, the people were not satisfied with any region where they had stayed until they reached the fertile Tigris-Euphrates plain, and there they settled down. The population and skills grew to the point where they could have adequate production of food and necessities, but also it became possible to develop a significant urban community. In the third verse of Genesis 11, "And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick, and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime they had for mortar." Nimrod had now attained the leadership of the people, as we learn in Genesis 10, verses 8 through 10. As the people advanced with their technology and skills, so that they could now specialize with activities other than mere survival, there were two choices of action they could take. One, they could systematically colonize and develop all parts of the earth, each with its own local government, in accordance with God's commands. Genesis 1:28 says, "And God said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion." This command repeated to Noah and his sons in Genesis 9:1. Or they could establish a strong centralized society, which would control the resources and occupation of the citizens, and be able to produce a self-sufficient civilization capable of centrally controlling the entire world. The latter choice would clearly better serve the purpose of Nimrod and his fellow rebels, and of course better serve the conspiracy of Satan as well. A self-sufficient society, well organized under a brilliant leader, would be a society no longer dependent on God. This was Nimrod's aim. Verse 3 tells us that the leadership of this society, which we believe to be led by Nimrod, had a meeting to determine what action they should take. After a discussion of the various needs and how to supply these needs, a decision was made. The first thing they now needed to accomplish their goal was to develop a brick-making industry. Go to, or come, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime they had for mortar. Evidently, good building stones were not very accessible on the river plains, and the timber was not suitable for the permanent structures they had in mind, but the clay soil was suitable for making strong bricks after proper heat treatment in a kiln. The more common manner of construction in older times was evidently to use stone with a clay mortar. When bricks were used, as in Egypt and Assyria, they were only sun-dried, but the construction in Babylon was stronger and would last longer, so here the writer calls special attention to the method they used. Furnace-treated bricks were used instead of stone, and tar was used instead of mortar. This slime was probably tarry material from the asphalt pits in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. Archaeology has shown this type of kiln-fired brick and asphalt construction was common in ancient Babylon. So we see here very clearly that these people were well advanced in their ability to construct not only suitable buildings, but also the materials for those buildings as they manufactured this kiln-fired brick and then mortared it together. Verse 4 of Genesis 11, and they said, go to, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. After making the decision to develop a brick-making industry, and possibly after the brick-making industry had been well established, they made another official decision and declared it with the phrase, go to. We have decided that we will build a city and include in this project a great tower whose top will reach unto heaven. Evidently, with the great planning they were doing, this was not to be a haphazard accumulation of dwelling and business places, which would happen with the natural growth of a city, but this would be a carefully planned urban center, each component designed for maximum permanence and usefulness so that the entire complex would operate efficiently. The great tower would dominate the city, both architecturally and culturally. It would serve as a focal point for the religious and political activities of the population and would be a symbol of their unity and strength. There was quite possibly a minority that did not go along with this plan, which would thwart God's original intention for them to colonize the entire earth. After all, God had not given any such instruction for the religious practices involved in this great tower. Just as we have no such instruction from God today to worship with a tower, not even a steeple on a building. It would seem that Shem and Noah, being true followers of God, would not have agreed to these plans. Nevertheless, as is usually the case, the minority for the truth could not sway the majority from doing the bidding of Satan and the forces of evil. The great construction project got underway. The builders were not concerned with God's plans. They intended to make us a name, and they actually did acknowledge that their purpose was contrary to God's command, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. The very thing God wanted them to do, they worked hard to avoid doing. We would think that just knowing that God wanted it to be so, as well as the basic human curiosity and desire to be independent, might cause many among them to want to explore and develop the unknown areas of the world. But this strong, unifying, and binding influence of the leaders was holding them in one location. As strong as their fear and admiration for the great Nimrod was, even this might not have been enough power to keep them together. Nimrod must have realized, as other dictators have discovered, that the people needed a strong religious motivation in addition to the political motivation to keep them together. This needed to be a religious belief powerful enough to overcome their knowledge that God had actually commanded them that they fill the whole earth. The tower was designed to give this strong religious motivating and unifying effect, as well as being a political focal point. And throughout the ages since that time, mankind has strongly desired to gather around and recognize religious objects which are not authorized by nor pleasing to God. This tower was not actually able to reach heaven. The words "to reach" are not in the original. It may have been thought that in a spiritual sense it could reach the spiritual resources available in heaven. They would build a tower unto heaven. That is, a tower dedicated to heaven and its spiritual inhabitants. This tower project may have been originally presented to the people as a work of their true spirituality. The tower would be lofty and beautiful and would symbolize the true majesty and glory of God in heaven. A great temple would be placed at the top with an altar and a worship center where men could offer sacrifices and worship God, as so many idolatrous religions have done since that time. The walls and ceilings of the temple would be beautiful works of art, with paintings and carvings representing their religious beliefs, possibly the signs of the zodiac being included in these ornate religious decorations. The impressive beauty and sacred purpose of the tower would, in the reasoning of the people, surely please God and more than compensate for the fact that the entire project was contrary to God's commandment. This tower would glorify man's achievement and ability rather than recognize the frailty of humans and the need for divine salvation. But in 1 Samuel 15:22, we learn it says, "To obey is better than sacrifice." When Cain offered the wonderful fruit produced by his own labor, God would not accept it. Our works today, which are not according to the obedience to God, will also be rejected, and Nimrod's magnificent tower would also be rejected by God. Here we must learn the lesson that we cannot substitute our ways for God's ways. We cannot take God's commands and just interpret them any way we want to in a loose fashion so that we bring about our desires and our purpose and our will rather than the purpose of God. God's commands are given for our distinct purpose, and any time we do not follow His command, we are missing the purpose. We cannot go around God's command and finally come into the right purpose that God has. We must close our lesson there. Next time we'll continue at this point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying goodbye, friends.